So our next speaker is Bob Lusardi. Some of the tools in the work that we do are the maps and cross-sections and associated stratigraphy produced by the Minnesota Geological Survey. Our next speaker, Bob Lusardi, the new Associate Director of the Minnesota Geological Survey. Bob has 27 years of experience mapping glacial deposits in Minnesota and elsewhere. She will be sharing some of the results from the ongoing work on glacial stratigraphy, the production of a new Hubbs and Goebel, and the associated cross-sections. Bob obtained her master's in geology from the University of Maine in Orono. And I want to say at the outset, make sure during the breaks that you look at the new materials that Bob will be talking about now.
I hope you can hear me. She wouldn't let me put my poster in the main poster hall, in the poster room, so my posters are actually in the hallway. So, if you're worried about Carrie's talk, you might be wondering about mine. I thought maybe it was a little too catchy, but it's also in honor of someone named Hobbs, Howard Hobbs, who would often write songs about glacial till. So, as Kate mentioned when she asked me to do this presentation, she was interested in products that we're currently working on and methods that we're using to help make consistent the way we talk about tills in Minnesota. If you're used to using our products, you'll know that we've described tills in a multitude of different ways, and that makes it very difficult to know what everybody else is talking about. And so most recently, we have been working to fix that. So in the early days, geologists called it like you see it. There's the old red till and the old gray till. And that works because color is one of the key factors that you can notice about a lot of different geologic deposits, whether they're minerals, whether they're rocks, or whether they're glacial tills. And our glacial tills have this great footprint. If you start looking at them in detail, you'll notice that tills from the northeast out of the Superior Basin are chock full of these red volcanic rocks and dark metasedimentary rocks through the Superior Basin. And tills from the north and northwest contain a lot of carbonate and a lot of gray shale from the northwest. And again, there's your red volcanic rock in a Des Moines lobe till. But as we've gone further into our glacial history, and lots of folks have studied glacial history throughout the ages, we've described them in a lot of different ways. So not just by color, but we use texture terms. Let's go that direction. We use texture terms. We'll use gray sandy till. We'll use ages, stages, or phases to describe various tills. We'll use ice lobes, so the Superior lobe, the Des Moines lobe. We use geomorphic expression. Is it hummocky? Is it stagnation till? Is it washed? And so, again, if you're familiar with using all of your some of our products and other mapping products, you'll see all of these different kinds of terminology. The original Hobbs and Goebel used lobe associations and moraine associations to define its units. And again, folks have always tried their hand at formalization names. Some never got to the formal stage, and so it adds a whole lot of confusion. You can't correlate if you don't know what you're talking about. If I'm talking about a red sandy loam till, you don't know necessarily what level that is in the stratigraphy. And we're doing more and more looking at subsurface units, and so it's really important to know that I'm talking about the same subsurface unit that you're talking about. And so in 2016, the Minnesota Geological Survey published the Quaternary Lithostratigraphic Units of Minnesota, which is QLUM for short. So if you hear us talk about QLUM, it is this naming paper. And in this paper, we took a page out of the nomenclature guide. We have 80 stratigraphic units. 47 are formally defined or redefined or revised in this booklet. Some units are abandoned. We no longer use the term Granite Falls till, for example. Some units just, they had a lot of baggage and misunderstanding around them, and so we've elected not to use those. We have 33 units that are recommended for formalization, so there will be a Coulomb Volume 2. Hopefully it won't take 10 years to put together like the first one. That is available on our website. You can also pick up a copy at the MGS. And Carrie showed this table. This is one of our correlation tables that's in Coulomb. And we started out with what we called islands in Minnesota. Sorry, you guys are kind of languishing on this side. Hopefully you can follow along. But folks tend to work in specific areas in Minnesota. So we have Ken Harris, who worked in the Red River Valley. We've got folks who work in the Arrowhead. And before Coulomb, each of these areas had their own stratigraphy. And we have maintained that sequence here. But in our Coulomb volume, we have defined and named all of these units so that you can trace them across all of these areas. And that's not to say the scheme is perfect. As you get further down into the subsurface units, you'll see SWRA2 or unnamed unit. There's still a lot of work to be done. Again, volume 2 at least. But it's a great start, and it's a great framework. So that if I say the red sandy loam till of the St. Francis Formation, for example, you'll know I'm not talking about the surface Cromwell tills from the Superior Lobe, but I'm down in this sequence. If you don't know what these formations are, you know where to go to look them up, so that we're all talking the same language. And who are we? Why would we do this? Well, we are the Minnesota Geological Survey. And why do we care? Because it's our mission to provide systematic geoscience information to support water, land, and mineral resources. And how do we do that? Well, you guys are mostly familiar with our flagship mapping program, which is the County Geologic Atlas Program. We have support from the state and from the federal government for these maps. They're 1 to 100,000 scale, and it's county by county. We take about 3 to 4 years to complete each county. We have 30 to go out of 87, so we're over halfway there. And with our current level of funding, we anticipate that we could be finished the state within the next 10 years. So we're coming down to the wire now. And actually, this map is even out of date because we have Polk County coming online and Chippewa as well. If you're not familiar with County Geologic Atlas, it is a comprehensive map package. We have paper maps from the surface down to the bedrock and everything in between, so it's a soup to nuts package of materials. We also provide digital PDF versions of our plates on our website, and we have all of the GIS data that is available, all of the county well index, all of the drilling that we've done for our work, all of our interpretations, line work. You can bring it into your GIS products. It's a really great resource. And most recently, within the last decade or so, groundwater has been a focus of these maps. And so we have tried to identify products that we can do to help in understanding some of these groundwater issues, which you see here. And that has meant the development of closely spaced cross sections. And this is an example from Anoka County. For the most part, for a regular county, we'll do cross sections every kilometer. In high density areas where there's a whole lot of data, Hennepin County, Anoka County, we did half kilometer spacing. There was so much data. And the key with our cross sections is that we're trying to identify those subsurface sand bodies, those glacial deposits that are potentially aquifers. And we develop a model, a stratigraphic model. We use rotary sonic drilling. Anywhere from 1 to 10 holes per county. If you're lucky, you'll get 10 holes in a county. We examine this core, we study it, we look at the sand grains, we look at the matrix texture, and we can identify till units using our new lithostratigraphy. We can name the till units and generate a model of what is the stratigraphic layers of glacial till in a particular area. And we relate those named formations that we've identified from each of the cores, and we trace them. We try to extend those and interpolate them across the county as data permit. And the Department of Natural Resources is one of our largest consumers of this information. They will take our cross-sections, recode it in terms of hydraulic properties, and use that information to show pollution sensitivity or groundwater flow. So they use our information, and again, it's important that we are talking the same language, that they know what our units mean, and everybody's talking about the same thing. What we do with our cross-section information is to take this two-dimensional cross-section and make three-dimensional surfaces out of those sand bodies so that you can actually see the extent of a sand body and how thick it is. And we turn that information back into a map unit for a paper plate. So again, the line work here shows the thickness of a particular sand, and the color shading will show how deep it is from the surface. And this is an example of one of our sand distribution plates that you will find in a county geologic atlas. But again, all of the digital surfaces and models are available as well. And these are each from the surface down through the stratigraphic column until you get to the very bottom, where we don't really know a whole lot about, but we try to model it anyway. So now we move to another topic completely, because we focus on county, 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 and we've got more than half of our counties done. It's time to start thinking bigger. We think statewide. And so several years ago, I had called to assign a single texture, a USDA texture. Here's the triangle that Carrie mentioned, 100% sand here, 100% silt, and 100% clay. I was asked to assign a single texture to each of our surface map units, which you've just heard is next to impossible. But if you tie my hands behind my back and you make me do it, I'll assign a texture to it. And so it's kind of a gross oversimplification, but it's basically the dominant texture of each of these units. And when you put it all together in GIS, well, it looks pretty terrible. So we decided, okay, we need to do some work here. And how are we going to make this happen? So Hobbs and Goebel was published in 1982, which is incidentally the same year that our first county geologic atlas was published. That was Scott County. And so we have 37 years of mapping that we can integrate, harmonize, compile together into a new surficial Quaternary geologic map. And so that's what we did. With support from the USGS as part of the Great Lakes Mapping Coalition, we started with a pilot program, just a small little area to see how it was going to work. And in 4 years, seven geologists, one GIS person, and an editor, we've created a new compilation. And it is on the wall out there in the hallway for you to see. It's not perfect yet. We're still working on it. It should be available for printing, hopefully within the next month or two. But also we have a digital database that goes along with this map. It will be at two different scales. We have detail at 1 to 100,000 and a simplified version at 1 to 500,000. It's not quite as seamless as Google zooming in that you'll see things change, but you can symbolize the map to show those different levels of detail. We also have a complete attribute table. So those USDA textures are included, the provenance, where's the sediment coming from, what direction, the formation and member names based on those QLUM definitions, so that it's the complete comprehensive package for the entire state. But why stop there? We map the counties piece by piece. We do cross-sections for each county. Let's see, can we do cross-sections for the entire state? This product was actually started before we started compiling the entire map as a test for our QLUM lithostratigraphy. Can we make this model work? Can we see these units across the entire state? And so, again, we started with a pilot. It was seven cross-sections. You can see this poster also out on the wall. Seven cross-sections that crossed all sorts of different terrains in Minnesota. And I have found that this is one of the best-received products that I ever had to work on, because it's useful not only for geologists to see how those units interact, groundwater folks and administrators have come up to me and said, hey, I can use this. This makes a point. You can see how thin the glacial sediment is in some places and how thick it is in others. So it's been a really great resource for all sorts of uses besides what we, you know, originally set out to do. And this is what we're now setting out to do. If we do 1 kilometer spacing for our 1 to 100,000 scale counties, we've decided at 1 to 500,000 scale, we can do cross-sections for the entire state every 5 kilometers. And we've started with the 24 sections across the metro area. Again, this is our pilot program to see, does this work? The blue line here is one of the sections from our original foray into statewide cross-sections. And then we picked this area because it's high priority. Across the metro area, we've got lots of different phases of county geologic atlas mapping. All of the shaded counties are ones that we do have maps for. A couple of them are still in progress. Kandy, Ohio is just about to be printed. Dakota is still in the works. Not all of these counties have 1 to 100,000 cross-sections with them. So it was a good test. How can we integrate some of our old mapping and some of our new mapping? And we plan to continue that program to the south with funding from the Great Lakes Coalition in this next year. And there's 130, I believe, cross-sections if we follow the 5K model. So I'm assuming we'll be finished within the next 5 to 6 years if that funding continues. So you might ask, if we're not calling it the old Great Hill anymore, what are we calling it? Leverett and Sardison defined the old Great Hill as the pre-Wisconsin Great Hills in southern Minnesota. And here it's outlined on our new map. And here are some of the formations that we have determined exist in that same area. So the Browerville Formation, the Rose Creek Formation, and the Elmdale Formation. But if you look closely, we have one category that's called old tills. And while we subdivided that using some terminology for tills originally described in Wisconsin, we do recognize those in eastern Minnesota, and we still do have the infamous old red and old gray mentioned on our map. It seems that however much we decide to change, things always stay the same. That's all I have. So before the break.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. I'd like to open up for questions you may have for Bob or any of the other speakers from this morning.
Those of us that, you know, drill down into the CWI databases and look at the strat table and look at the quaternary strat codes are not seeing the same thing as were published in the lovely, you know, the document that you guys pulled together, which is a huge thing. I mean, I really, really appreciate that. I'm just wondering, is there any feasibility of trying to transfer some of what we've learned about the lithostratigraphic units into that type of database, or is simply the data not appropriate to be able to do that?
I think we should at least make sure our codes are the same. CWI codes tend to be 4 letters. Our mapping codes tend to be 3 letters because our editor demands that. So 2 or 3 letter codes. But we should be able to come up with a correlation table so that, that it's an easy, you know, blend between what you're seeing on well logs if they're identified and if we can define the units that closely. It's hard to do in well logs because we don't have the data that helps us identify these different units. We're kind of going on what the well driller is saying. Is it yellow clay or is it blue clay or is it sandy clay? So we're using our model to extend those units. I suppose we could intersect CWI with our cross sections and actually label them that way.
Well, yeah, just wondering, you know, you've done a lot of work to make these interpretations and, you know, they're there, and
I agree.
You can find the wells, and it would be kind of nice to have that as a feedback to get back into those data sets so that those of us that use them can actually say, oh, that's what they think it is.
That'll be the next phase.
Okay.
I have a question on terminology.
Yes.
So I had a professor back in college years ago who said the term glacial till is redundant because all till is glacial. And he was trying to get people to just use the word till, and so I wanted to get your take on that.
You'll hear me say glacial till. You'll hear Carrie say till. It's you say tomato, I say tomato. You're right. It is redundant, but so is the Rio Grande River.
So a number of us are putting in borings, holes for a variety of reasons. Are there things that we could be doing to help you that you'd be receptive to? Do you have any?
Take samples and send them to us.
Well, how many samples do you want?
We typically sample our rotary sonic cores every 3 to 5 feet. It's not necessarily a given because we're able to look at it and say, oh, well, this is all the same, and we don't necessarily need to take the sample every 3 to 5 feet. It, beggars can't be choosers. Well drillers send us cuttings all the time, and we wash them, and sometimes they sit on the shelf forever until that county comes up. We're able to pull those out and use those data. It's fabulous. So
if the project would allow it, you wouldn't mind hearing about where there are borings, what kind of depths you're going to, and what samples are available?
Yes.
Especially you hear that, everybody?
Let us know what you're doing. You can see what we're doing. We've got our progress reports all on our status map online, so you know where we're working. We don't know where you're working necessarily, but we should work together.